Hey there, it's Mike Tramp, and you're listening to White Line Fever, where rock and roll is still alive like it always has been, and it always will be.
Welcome to White Line Fever. This is the beginning of the program, but the third part of our interview with Tommy Boyce from the Casanovas. Hello again, Tommy.
G'day.
So tell us, we've talked about the distant past. We've talked about the release of the new record and how it come together. Let's talk about, I suppose, the future. Were you always confident that there would be a future, that we'd be sitting here talking about touring and a new record? Or did you think at one point over the last sort of 6 years, maybe the band was done?
Nah, I always knew that we'd do another record, and I just always knew in the back of my mind we'd be playing again and doing it again. So I don't know why, I just didn't doubt it at all. So yeah.
So what does the future hold? You want to get out touring now? You want to?
Yeah. So we'll tour,
haven't you? But that's kind of hard to organise, isn't it? Going overseas.
Yeah, we'll I think overseas is definitely on the cards. So you know, Europe and stuff beckons, and you know, for me that would be incredibly, you know, gratifying, you know, given the work we've done and the records. So, because I don't know, there's like, I love playing in Australia and I love playing at home and stuff in Melbourne, but there's nothing better, I reckon, than just being on the road and playing in new and different places and to new and different crowds. It's just the most fun thing you can ever do, I reckon, just about. So, yeah, I'll be so grateful if we get to do that again.
Is it important these days to get a release in quotation marks overseas, or now with iTunes, is it, who cares? I mean...
Yeah, no, we do. We will, I think we've got, we'll get a release over there. We've got, because we've had releases before, so we've got contacts and I think interested parties. So, yeah, that'll all get sorted out by our label manager here, though, so it kind of gets licensed through them and stuff, so I don't really know
Yeah.
who it's going to be through or whatever at the moment.
And what about national tours? Like, you're going to go out on your own, you're looking for supports, what's going on there? This is here and on.
Yeah, we'll go out. I don't know if we probably won't be able to take a support band, you know, because we wouldn't be able to pay them enough. But yeah, we'll definitely play. Like, I mean, I'd love to play all the rural towns and all, you know, the major cities and do like a full on 2 month tour, but it's just not realistic now because, well, without kind of national radio, like, just makes it unfeasible. You've got to have kind of Triple J behind you and stuff, which for us is pretty unlikely, I think,
because they don't play rock and roll anymore. What
yeah, also probably just that we're older and, you know, the sort of youth radio, I guess.
Can you see the point where maybe you can go back to doing this full time, or is that just, what is the threshold? I mean, you know, now if you want to sort of make a living out of being in a rock band, I mean, what is the threshold? What is the minimum you need as far as airplay and sales and
yeah, it's a bit of a tough one nowadays with sales, because obviously people just download stuff. And so sales, which are already sort of, you know, without the illegal downloading is pretty hard work. It's now with illegal downloading, it's just almost impossible to even factor that into potential income. So there's that. The other thing is live income. I mean, if you were getting hammered on the radio and stuff, you could tour and make money out of touring. That'd be great. And the other means by which you can make money is, you know, when movies or TV or ads want your music for.
You've been in a few computer games and that, haven't you? Is that...
Yeah. And a few ads and stuff like that. Like, I couldn't care less what anyone says. It's not selling out. You've got to make something back for what you do. And, like, that's the only times we've ever actually made any money out of the band is getting our stuff on those ads and whatever, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the Airborne guys just seem to work themselves into the ground. You probably know those fellas from Melbourne. I mean...
Yeah, of course. Well, they're like... With them, it's like they've bitten the bullet and gone, okay, we're all going to live together. This is going to be our thing. We're going to, you know, going to go hell for leather or nothing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and good on them for doing that. I really respect that. And, you know, it's without any help from radio here, do you know what I mean? So, and they, look at them, they're huge in Europe, so that's fantastic for them, I just think. So, yeah, I don't know, it's different. We would, it's sort of, we're in a different position, obviously, now, like, with everyone kind of having jobs and babies and stuff like that, so makes it a bit of a unlikely sort of option.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, it's been nice of you to join us, Tommy. I really appreciate your time, and good luck with what's coming up. Hopefully, we'll see you around during the next. Is this? I mean, can you see this being an ongoing thing? We're not going to wait 6 years for the next record, or is it really going to tuck it and see?
Definitely not. No, I really would love to get things just moving quicker and quicker in the future. I didn't like having such a long break. It's kind of weird because I love playing and it's part of me sort of thing. So I kind of feel a bit weird without it, you know. So
yeah.
Definitely don't want to wait.
And the response has been good. Like everyone's excited that you're back. Is it been good?
Oh yeah, yeah. No, it's been fantastic. It's been a real vibe around it, which is really nice. Yeah.
Okay, one more song, and we'll leave you in peace, mate. What do you think for us off the new record?
I play He's Alive, the first track.
Story? Any story? That's an interesting song. I was going to ask you what that was about.
Yeah, that one's about it's about the band's return. The song is metaphorically written about the uprising of the beast, which is the band. So
awesome.
that's what it's about, you know. So
that's very metal.
Yeah, it does have a very metal feel, that song. And if you, like, you know, you have you mentioned the stuff about the British wave and British heavy metal, those bands, like that song very much has that that kind of feel to it, a bit of a Thin Lizzy meets Judas Priest sort of thing.
Thank you. this is Tommy from the Casanovas, and you're on White Line Fever.
Okay, welcome back to the program. We are in the victorious Queensland dressing room, Origin 1, at ANZ Stadium, 11-10, and I'm with the assistant coach. Is that your correct designation, Michael Hagan?
Oh, I reckon that's close enough. That's all right. I'm one of Mel's helpers.
Now, we're killing two birds with one stone here. So if I was to do a colour story, which I have to do tonight, before I leave here at 4 a.m. or whatever it is, about what was behind that win, and what because... You know, Origin 1's sometimes a bit difficult to get a narrative because there's no issues.
No.
So, but from an insider's point of view, what stands out in your mind about tonight and the lead-up?
What stands out is the type of game you need to bring to this stadium. It's just a much harder place to play at. There's always very few points scored, and you've got to play a bit like New South Wales have had a game plan for the last probably 10 years here, so we had to really come with a bit of a blueprint that they used to try and get ourselves in front. And really, the effort that we gave, our kicking game, our perseverance got us we were pretty good in a lot of areas and got us a one-point victory. So that's how sort of hard we had to work and how patient we had to be, and very nearly could have lost it in the last 5 minutes, which is typical of game one, you know, fluency not quite there, timing not quite there. Even though this team's been together for quite a while, it still takes a game or two to get that going. So I think we'd be pretty happy with a victory down here in any circumstances.
So you kind of borrowed from them a bit then tactically?
Yeah, and I think they've, you know, if you look at game two last year, they just had a mentality of get out of the backfield, kick in the corner, build pressure, wait for an error, and they got that result in the last 5 minutes, didn't they? Game two last year, so we sort of figured it was going to be a similar mentality, and just a really tough battle in the middle, and they picked two kickers in Pierce and Hodgkinson, so we knew our back three. I thought our back three were really good in their kick reception work, and pretty much that was the game.
Is it all tactics and footy, or are there other things at play? We heard Mel in the press conference say they're one of the greatest teams ever, and they continually prove critics wrong. I mean, this year, I guess if you were tipping against Queensland, the reason you tip against them would be the old age thing. Boys are aware of that, I guess?
Oh, I think, you know, there's a subtle underlying tone there that people have sort of prepared to, you know, criticise or write them off to a degree. And but, I mean, the way in which the senior players worked with the coaches in how we needed to play, I think that's actually it's a really good group of people that have understood Origin for a long time, and for them to sort of realise that we might need a slightly different approach, that's full credit to those senior players and our key players, Cameron Smith, Cooper Cronk, Jonathan Thurston, Billy Slater. They're as professional as anyone I've ever come across, so they have a huge influence on how the team plays, and rightly so.
New South Wales had it down your end with maybe 9 minutes to go, I'm just guessing, but they didn't shoot for field goal. Were you surprised?
Yeah, they actually went a bit of a wider field position on about play four or five, so it didn't really give them that opportunity to get in position, which, and I said to Mel, maybe 15 out, maybe we need to think about a point, because you've got to get one when you can. You don't want to wait till the end to get one. And we, I think, took that opportunity to shoot for goal, and New South Wales maybe didn't quite get themselves in the right part of the field for that point.
Do you even need to call a field goal when Cooper Cronk's out there? Does anyone need to say anything?
I think it's... Well, even the setup at the end, it was a little bit around making sure we got ourselves in the right frame of mind. And even the good players under fatigue need those little reminders of... Like in the NJT, made the call to have a shot, where, you know, Mel and I, that you leave that up to the players to make that call. But, you know, maybe kicking it out, setting up for a point might have been a wiser move.
So JT called for Cooper to take the shot, or did he call for it himself at the end?
I'm not sure who sorted that out, but I'm just saying in the kick for goal stakes, that was up to him to make that call, or Cameron Smith, you know.
We're in this little Andy room, which is next to your dressing room. When the players are in here and they're in there before the game, in the old days of State of Origin, it'd be fire and brimstone, probably not much finessing, tactics-wise.
No.
What about now? Do the blokes talk about things other than tactics and completions, or is that sort of gone out of the game
now? Yeah, I mean, it's a bit more, I guess, individual in terms of how guys like to prepare for a game. You know, we've got certain things we need to be good at every game at Origin level that...
You know, no one talks to their thighs or puts Denko rub on their head anymore.
I haven't seen that. But there's not too much fun and frivolity. I mean, Alfie's still got a bit of that going for the staff, but not for the players so much. But it's just a different event to what it was. But it's still good fun to be around, and they're a great group to work with.
Are the Blues a hope in Melbourne and Brisbane? I mean, you've got to say yes, but they're up against it now, aren't they? Yeah, this is you got one hand on the trophy, haven't you, tonight?
Yeah, it's just such a critical part of the series to get in front. For me, I thought we need to win tonight and in Melbourne to get us in position in Brisbane. So the fact that we've got ourselves off to a good start, and like Origin, you know, that you think we'll get two nutted out, but it doesn't seem to always work out that way. And you know, more than likely we'll be going to Brisbane for a decider.
Yeah. Okay, I've got to, for the audio part of this program, I've got to go do some housekeeping stuff, so I won't do that in front of you. I'll go and talk to myself in the corner into my phone and look like an idiot. Thanks for talking to us tonight, Michael. Congratulations.
No worries, sir. See you, mate.
Okay, so WLF Podcast, we are on Twitter. On Facebook, it's White Line Fever, just White Line Fever. We're also on iTunes. What you need to do is please make a comment. How good is this? We're in the State of Origin dressing room straight after the game, going to upload it immediately. I went to a lot of effort. Make a comment on iTunes. Also go to whitelinefever.ning.com please click on the donation link. That'd be awesome. Or click on the Amazon link, and if you buy something at Amazon, I get a tiny cut. It doesn't cost you any more. Or just join whitelinefever.ning.com. That would be a big help. But please subscribe on iTunes. And I normally go through donors, but Tim Hishon, I think, is the only one I noticed I got any money from. I apologise to you if you sent me money in the last month, but I only got it from Tim Hishon. Okay, let's play some new music. And then we'll be back with the rest of the rock interviews, and including the second part of Dave Ellefson, and the first, or the second part, sorry, the final part of the Dave Ellefson interview, and the second part, which is in episode 74, has got enormous interest across the board from the rock and roll media, and it put us in top 10 on Podomatic and all that sort of stuff. So I'm sure you'll be just as interested in what he's got to say in the final part of that interview. Thanks for joining us. State of Origin is underway. I'm at Magic Weekend this weekend, and we'll bring you the next episode from Newcastle or Leeds or somewhere like that. And after that, it's Sweden Rock. How awesome is that? Okay, back after the break.
Hey, this is Jizzy Pearl here, hanging with Steve, and you're listening to White Line Fever.
Welcome back to the program. Final part of our interview with Dave Ellison from Megadeth. Now, can you tell us a little bit about what's on the horizon for Megadeth? You said you've started writing, or you're about to start writing. Then there'll be a record. I imagine there'll be a pretty big tour. What are the sort of aspirations there? You know.
Well, the writing is pretty much done, and I mean it's you know, that can always change and develop even as we're in the studio working on things together. But the actual recording we're basically rehearsing, finishing the pre-production, and then we'll go into the actual recording in probably early May is when we're really going to officially get started on that. And the thing is that, you know, we initially thought, because we had some tour dates that we were looking at doing in August, we thought we would have the record out by then and get in, you know, and then that would lead into the tour. Well, some events, those tour dates have since gotten moved, which quite honestly is a good thing, because it really frees us up to have the time to make the record now at, you know, with a schedule that's a little more appropriate, you know, for how we want to make a great record. And so now it looks like we'll probably, I'd say sometime, you know, within the next year, we will get the Megadeth record out. And then from there, we'll get into the touring and everything that follows with that.
Some of your contemporaries have, over the years, done some pretty sharp right turns. Have we got a Saint Anger or a Black album coming? Is it going to be anything anything surprising?
Well, I'd like to think it's not going to be a stinker. That's for sure. You know, I'd like to think it's going to be a pretty kick-ass record. I tell you, there's a couple things on there that are certainly heavy and but they're very forward-thinking for Megadeth in a good way. You know, not some, you know, pop right turn or anything like that. You know, so it's, you know, I'd like to think when the record says Megadeth on it, you're going to get Megadeth inside of it.
Yeah. I was listening to one other podcast you appeared on, an Australian podcast, and you were talking about the dark days of addiction and that sort of thing. I mean, that's obviously going to be a big part of your spoken word, I'd imagine, and the power that you have to help other people, it must be quite a blessing in a way. I just wonder, have you read the Heroin Diaries by Nikki Sixx? I just wonder what you think of that, and because Motley Crue kind of turned their addictions into it gave their career a kickstart, didn't it, when The Dirt came out? I mean, what do you make of all that?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. We were on tour with Motley Crue in 2000, and I was talking to Nikki about that, because I had a little bit of history with Nikki. You know, I was there the night that he died in the hotel. He was literally in my room, you know, 5 minutes before he overdosed, next door. And then 9 months later, you know, he made a visit to rehab where I was in rehab suffering from my heroin addiction. And, you know, he and I, you know, have had a, you know, kind of a cool, you know, bond over those things over the years, you know. And we travel in very different circles, but it's just kind of cool when you see somebody, you've got that, you know, when you meet somebody over Life and Death Matters, that's a bond that stays with you forever, you know.
Yeah.
And I remember in 2000, he was talking about writing this book that would expose everything, and that book was called The Dirt, of course, you know. And then when he did, I have not read The Heroin Diaries. I've heard good things about it. I probably should read it. I've not read it. I kind of have my own heroin diaries of a sort, which is probably why I didn't read his, because I have my own. Mm.
Because people, you know, know you heroin addict- keep a diary when you're going through this terrible ordeal, and there are doubters out there, but it sounds like to you it's quite, you know, it's totally reasonable to keep a diary, you know?
Oh, yeah, I mean, heroin is this dark, insulary, artistic kind of drug, you know, that whereas cocaine or methamphetamine get you all fired up and zing you out the door and get doing a million things, heroin is a very withdrawn drug, you know. And it's the thing I enjoyed about it when I was getting into it, you know. But like all drugs and with addiction, they can and often come around like a boomerang and, you know, cut you to shreds, you know. And And, you know, heroin is certainly one of the most insidious with that type of, you know, feature of its addiction. And, you know, it's you know, for me, yeah, I mean, for back to your question, yeah, it's certainly something where I can, you know, share my life story with that, and it can help a lot of people. And I'm sure that will be talked about in this spoken word tour, and not from a preachy don't do drug, you know, kind of thing, but more just from my own experience being in it, you know, and being down in it, and having those experiences that, you know, really, you know, at the time they didn't seem like they were that, you know, that maybe that important to me, but, you know, now looking back on it, I see from out of that darkness, you know, was born a whole new life. And I think that's the power of that is if we can get out of those things and how that process happens, you really do get reborn to have kind of a, you have like a second life within one lifetime. And that definitely has been my life for sure.
Our time is up, I'm afraid. I had a long, long list of things. We barely touched the surface. Didn't get halfway down the page. But thanks for joining us, Dave. And if we could just get one more song, we'll leave you in peace.
Sure. I tell you what, how about we end with, since we're talking about addiction and all things kind of nutty like that, why don't we finish with Megadeth's Sweating Bullets?
Misfits way of life. A dark black past is my most valued possession. Hindsight is always 20/20, but looking back, it's still a bit fuzzy. Speak of mutually assured destruction. Nice story. Talk to me, got ya.
Feeling paranoid to an enemy of phosphorin. Anxiety's attacking me. My air is getting.
Me again. You can subdue but never tame me. It gives me a migraine headache, sinking down to your level. Yeah, just keep on thinking it's my fault and stay an inch or two at a kicking distance. Mankind has got to know his limitations.
Feeling claustrophobic like the walls are closing in. Bloodstains on my
Blood stains on my head.
Nice talking to myself. A credit to dementia. Someday you too will know my pain and smile its black tooth grin. If the war inside my head won't take a day off, I'll be dead. My icy fingers claw your back. Here I come again.
Hey everybody, this is David Austin from Megadeth. We're hanging here on White Line Fever.
Yep. Okay, welcome back to the program, the final part of our interview with Joey Vera, and we've been talking about Motor Sister. Now, we better talk about your other bands as well, particularly Armored Saint, who've got a new record coming out. So you'll be doing this all again in a few weeks, won't you? The press merry-go-round and all that. What's that like?
Yeah.
What's it like to be sort of pumping up, promoting two projects at the same time almost, you know?
It hasn't been that confusing except for today, actually. Cause I did an Armored Saint press in the morning, and then in the afternoon I'm doing Motor Sister. So I'm trying to like get the phone rings, and I'm answering the phone, thinking, okay, what am I supposed to talk about? I have no idea what this is about. But you know, it's fun. You know, it's I'm trying not to confuse people too much with too many things going on, but you know, I personally enjoyed playing in different projects. I think it's fulfilling for me as a musician and as a person. I actually become to thrive on it, so for me it's fun, and I don't have a problem switching gears and all that.
Yeah. People imagine, I guess, that they got a very simplistic view of why there are so many people who are in many bands. They just kind of think, well, there's streaming now and there's illegal downloading, and I'd imagine the checks are getting smaller for musicians, so they just look around and they're looking for more gigs. Is it really that simple? Or is it more complex, the reason that it is more common now?
Well, I can't answer for everybody. I mean, I suppose that some people are like that. They consider themselves more like session people, and so their work is hustling. You know, hustling gigs. You know, you got one gig here, you got one gig there, and at the end of the year, hopefully, you did enough gigs to pay your bills and everything. And I mean, that's certainly a mentality that's not uncommon, especially here in LA. I mean, I live in LA, and it's pretty common for that. It's been like that forever, though. You have studio session guys, and you have touring session guys, and it's like that. But it's not for everybody. I mean, not everybody can deal with that. Not everybody wants to do that. I don't really do that. I don't go out and hustle to look for gigs. I just sort of end up playing with people that are friends, you know, that are people I have an association with. So for me,
I'm lucky that I have several different friends that are in different bands, and they're stylistically, they're all super different, you know, and I've been fortunate to play with a lot of different great musicians, and for me it's been great.
Mm.
But you know, I mean, it's true what you say. It's hard to make a living if you're in one band. I mean, Armored Saint's Armored Saint's an unusual case because we're not your normal everyday working band. We don't make a record every 24 months and do a touring cycle, and you know, we're on the road for, you know, whatever, 6 to 9 months out of the year. We don't do that. We make records every 5 to 10 years.
Yeah.
And we don't really go on these lengthy tours. So the amount of income that Armored Saint makes is almost nil. You know, right. It's very, very, very little. So I couldn't afford to be just in Armored Saint if I wanted to.
Mm. Yeah.
But that's not the reason why I go out and join Our Fates Warning and join Motor Sister and whatever else I do. The other things come to me because of I'm friends with the guys in Fates Warning. I've been friends for many, many years, and they asked me to come on board with them 17 years ago, and I'm still doing that. And then the Motor Sister thing, again, just something that organically happens.
Yeah.
So I'm lucky.
Yeah. You know, last night, walking distance from where I am now, I saw Dave Ellefson do a spoken word date here in Sydney. So it's really interesting. People are getting very creative, aren't they, and branching out and maybe learning a few new skills. It's probably not necessarily a bad thing. He actually mentioned you during his talk as well. So there you go.
Oh, really?
Nice. Yeah, he said when you're in Anthrax, maybe at the end, that he was talking to them about maybe he was approached to maybe join, you know, and he didn't want to. He thought they should get Frank back and this sort of thing. So he actually mentioned it. But to me, it'd be a very scary thing to get up on stage for an hour and try to keep a crowd, you know, just talking. I mean,
I think that, like, when you're in the music business, and I think because of the advent of the internet, people feel like they have a closer connection to you than ever before.
Yeah.
And so the other ways that people want to, they want to see other facets of musicians, and it comes in the way of what you just said, spoken word, some guys writing books, some guys go on clinic tours, some guys go to schools and speak at schools. I mean, there's a lot of different ways that musicians can kind of, you know, utilize what they do for a living. And also, at the same time, sometimes it actually, you can earn a few extra bucks too as well.
I've got lots more things to ask you, Joey, but we've run out of time. So time for another song, and we'll say goodbye.
All right. Well, let's end on an Armored Saint song. How about that?
Okay. Which one would you like?
Let's end it out on let's end it out on Last Train Home.
I got a white line fever. Going around the land down under. Going to turn around the corner way down yonder. And I'm not even going to try to rhyme anymore. Michael Monroe here for White Line Fever. You get a chance, come and check us out live. We're going to rock your socks off and whatever. Rock like fuck. That's what I say, okay? Come on down and rock on.